From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief Radio. I'm your host, Reverend Welton Gaddy. This week we're broadcasting from the Center for American Progress Studios in Washington, D.C.
The First Amendment was a milestone in world history. For the first time, a national government promised to stay out of religion.
On December 18th, many PBS television stations will premiere the new documentary, First Freedom, The Fight for Religious Liberty. The film presents the story of how this crucial cornerstone of our pluralistic society was born. And it wasn't without struggle. Filmmaker Lee Groberg will join us later on this week's show.
Pope Benedict is out with a surprising new book about the life of Jesus. In it, he makes a number of corrections. For one thing, our calendar is off a bit. He says Jesus was born a few years earlier than commonly believed. And those nativity scenes, the Pope says they're not quite right either.
Just in time for Christmas, Pope Benedict XVI has published his latest book, The Infancy Narratives, Jesus of Nazareth. It completes his trilogy, examining the life of Jesus through the dual prisms of history and theology. I'll talk to Alessandro Speciali, Vatican correspondent for Religion News Service, who has written on the controversy sparked by the book that some have described as debunking Christmas. The Pope? But first,
I think it's really important for clergy to show their support of the gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual community. It's the church that has oftentimes shown the most prejudice, and it's the church that has to heal that wound.
Especially at this time of year, many of us spend far more time with family, or at least thinking about family. That's why it seemed timely this week to learn about an organization based in Amherst, Massachusetts, that's working to promote the welcoming of all families in our society. It's called the Family Diversity Projects. Several of their exhibits have been shown widely across the country this year, as well as the compelling We Have Faith displays. And joining me right now is Peggy Gillespie, the Project's co-director. Peggy, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much for hosting me. I appreciate it.
Would you outline the subject areas in which the Family Diversity Projects operate and tell us where the idea for this came from?
We started in about 1993 with a project on race called Of Many Colors, which featured people of multiracial families, both adoptive and interracial couples. And the reason we started, Gigi Kaiser was my daughter's preschool teacher and also a successful photographer. I was the adoptive mom of a multiracial daughter, and so I wanted to learn more from people that had been down that road before. So we created this exhibit, wrote a story for the Boston Globe on multiracial families. I'm a journalist. And from there, people started wanting our exhibit. Then we went to Love Makes a Family on LGBT people and their families, which caused an enormous controversy in Amherst when all the elementary schools were going to host it, and led to a federal lawsuit that was ruled in favor of the school showing Love Makes a Family. And because of the publicity for that project, it began to travel actually worldwide. People at that time, they were saying, this was 1996, that these families, these LGBT families, were going to, they put it, sexually harass the young children. They should not learn about gay and lesbian families at such an early age as elementary school. We became featured in the wonderful film It's Elementary, about teaching gay issues in elementary schools, which I think is crucial, as well as church schools and synagogue schools and and the like. And from there we went on to kind of look at all the range of diversity that we could come up with as an exhibit. We did mental illness, Nothing to Hide. We did disabilities, The Road to Freedom, which I worked on with a group of eighth graders, actually. We have one famous exhibit that touches on all topics called In Our Family, Portraits of All Kinds of Families. And then we have Pioneering Voices, that is portraits of transgender people that a Smith College intern helped create.
The first one was on race. Did you get the kind of response on the subject of race that you have received in response to Love Makes a Family on GLBT issues.
Right. That is an interesting part of our story and our evolution, because when we first brought Of Many Colors to our local schools, it was embraced widely and fully by the whole community and the elementary schools where we started. And it included, of course, gay and lesbian families, mm-hmm. who happened to be multiracial, but nobody seemed to be upset by that.
That's amazing.
And then we went back to those same schools with Love Makes a Family a couple of years later, expecting the same warm welcome, and the superintendent of schools said, no, we can't bring this to elementary schools. It will make the children think about sex, and, you know, because how could two women have a baby? And, I said, well, you know, if a pregnant straight school teacher comes into school, don't you think the children are going to wonder how she got pregnant, and is she going to really answer that question fully? You know, so it became, it was like this headline for a year in Amherst papers and Northampton papers. Petitions were signed, and finally when it did get sent into all the elementary schools, I remember one child saying, writing in the guest book, what was the big deal? It's just families. Another one wrote, we're all created equal, remember? With a big question mark.
You know, I mentioned in the introduction that this particular time of the year, that it is a time in which people think about family, and that means, I think, that non-traditional families seem more often to find themselves particularly marginalized. Do you see that, and do you see your work in this area more as bolstering families facing those challenges or in changing the hearts and minds of those who are causing the problems?
Well, I would hope that we are doing both.
Yes.
I think we want to change the hearts and minds of, we'll say, the movable middle, you know, and even some people that are a little further down the what people think of as unmovable, mm-hmm. and get them to move, and to see that all families need to be safe, need to be equally valued, need to have legal rights. Every family, every person needs to be treated with love and respect. And as Reverend Rebecca Volkel said, it's blasphemy to be saying hateful things about any kind of person. We're all God's children. We're all God's creation is good.
I want you to tell me something about the We Have Faith exhibit.
Yes. We Have Faith, we have just launched it in six cities in October. It's lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender clergy and people of faith speak out, and also allies, such as Methodist minister Reverend Carpin in New York, who has a church that welcomes all people. The purpose of this exhibit right now is at First Covenant Baptist UCC in D.C. and at City of Refuge, Bishop Flunder's wonderful church out in San Francisco, celebrating their 30th anniversary, and in New York at the MCC New York. We want it to go to every single house of worship that it can reach, both places that are open and affirming and places that want to be and places that are debating about it. We want to help every LGBT youth realize that there's another way of seeing faith and being LGBT that is far from what the religious right or wrong, as people call them, have said, you know, that no one is an abomination. No one is outside of God's love. Everyone is included and to be accepted for who they are. And that's the message this exhibit.
For people interested, how can they find out more about your work, and how can they get in touch to bring the Family Diversity Projects to their own communities?
Well, we have, of course, a website, which is FamilyDiv, D as in dog, I, V as in Victor, as in diversity, or familydiversity.org. And we also had a wonderful article in the National Advocate this week, so they can see that if they check that out online under Arts and Entertainment. And we're right in the midst of a major Kickstarter campaign so that we can raise funds for this exhibit. It ends December 15th, so we need everybody to donate, even a dollar, just everything. Spread the word, because we are tiny nonprofits, so we need to survive, and that Kickstarter campaign you can find under We Have Faith under Kickstarter.com. So those are the different ways, but, you know, basically come to our website and join us and bring our exhibits. They've been all over the world. We Have Faith, I think, is our shining jewel in the crown right now, and
good.
We want it to be shown everywhere.
Peggy Gillespie is co-director of the Family Diversity Projects based in Amherst, Massachusetts. Peggy, we really do wish you success. It's a wonderful work that you're doing, and we thank you for being with us today on State of Belief Radio, and we invite you to come back and tell us how it's doing.
Thank you so much, and thank you for your advocacy and your brilliant work in this field, too.
We need to take a quick break, but coming up next, filmmaker Lee Groberg, whose latest documentary, First Freedom, The Fight for Religious Liberty, is about to be premiered on PBS. And later in the show, we'll hear from Alessandro Speciali, Vatican correspondent for Religion News Service, who's written about Pope Benedict XVI's new book on the Christmas Nativity story. Not a manger, but a cave? We'll talk about that and a lot more. I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief Radio, brought to you by Interfaith Alliance. Welcome back, everyone, to State of Belief Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy. We live in an age when it often seems most people don't have much use for history. The focus is on the here and now, and this indifference to the past makes it vulnerable to those that would seek to rewrite it for their own benefit. So we see the likes of David Barton, who tries to redefine the Founding Fathers as conservative Christian zealots, while many Americans don't know much to the contrary. And that's dangerous. And that's also why a new documentary film, which addresses the place of religion in our nation's foundations, is so important. First Freedom, The Fight for Religious Liberty, premieres on PBS television stations nationwide on Tuesday, December 18th. And I am honored as well as pleased that the film's producer and director, Lee Groberg, is with us today. Lee, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you very much.
We've heard some heated debate in recent years regarding the founders' true intent when it comes to religious liberty in this country, but by and large, that debate assumes a unanimity of opinion on the part of the founders. And the first thing that really stands out about your film is the amount of internal dissent and compromise that were part of the formation of these principles. Is that the fight to which the title refers?
Yes, I believe so. The founding fathers were not all of one belief, nor were some of them very outwardly religious. Mm-hmm. They had a lot of different opinions. And frankly, I think that's what the strength of this show is, because it illustrates the diversity of faiths and the desire for these men as wanting to get along. So toleration was an important thing, but accommodation was a bigger thing.
Yeah.
And they worked to have a law that would ensure that those who wanted to worship or those who didn't want to worship could enjoy the same freedom.
Lee, what were some of the competing agendas among the founders when it came to the relationship between religion and this brand new republic?
Well, I think two stand out. One of the founding fathers, Patrick Henry, was very much in favor of a general assessment, hearkening back to the days in the old country where the state sponsored religion.
Mm-hmm.
And Thomas Jefferson was adamantly against it, because he felt to compel a man to pay for something that he doesn't believe is tyrannical, as he said. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, Thomas Jefferson prevailed through James Madison and the team. George Mason was involved, but it helped put an end to this general assessment and bring about a law of religious liberty.
Was there any agenda in the initial discussions that was advocating what is now referred to as a Christian nation?
I don't think so. You know, the founding fathers were different stripes of Christians, but I don't think a labeling, if you will, as America as a Christian nation was necessarily true. For instance, George Washington, one of our great founding fathers, wrote a letter to the congregants at the Touro Synagogue in Newport, Rhode Island, assuring this Jewish congregation that they would enjoy freedom to worship in this country and that religious bigotry had no place here. And we all know that there was religious bigotry. There was some infighting and Catholics. It was illegal to be a Catholic in New York. And Baptists didn't fare very well in Virginia because the Anglican, the dominant church there, was even arresting Baptist ministers for preaching. And and so I think the reaction on the part of the Baptists, we owe them a debt of gratitude for helping the nation to become a nation that have a right to worship freely.
Where did this group of people get their inspiration? I mean, this is not an easy thing to do. What kept them going?
I firmly believe that the founding fathers and the wording of the documents of this country were divinely inspired. However, I don't know that anyone would have acknowledged that at the time. I believe whatever made their motor run, we can paint it any way we want, but I believe that it was more than coincidental that a group of bright minds and motivated men would come together to insist, one, to declare independence from their mother country, then to form a government, and to have the educational background, the political background, the international background, such as Franklin and Adams and Jefferson, and then the bright minds of some of these James Madisons and Patrick Henrys. To me, it's more than coincidence that it all came together. But again, I think whatever anyone's religious persuasion or lack of religion, I don't think anybody can deny that it was a remarkable thing that they came together, that these laws were formed first time in Western history, and that they have lasted for 240 years and will likely continue if we don't mess it up too badly.
and that's a part of why this film was done, to see we don't mess it up too badly.
I hope so. I really do.
Well, is there a hero in this story?
I think there are a lot of heroes. You know, the unsung heroes are the wives of these men. But we haven't painted them that way. If we allowed Cokie Roberts, who has some wonderful things to say, a little more time in the film, we would have celebrated the women more. But they have a great role. Who are the heroes? Recognizing there are more than 70 founding fathers, we had to winnow this down, and so we kept it to five: Benjamin Franklin, George Washington, James Madison, John Adams, and Thomas Jefferson.
We've got to take a short break, but coming up, I want to talk some more with filmmaker Lee Groberg. His latest project is First Freedom, The Fight for Religious Liberty. And just a reminder, there will be more of this conversation and of all of the interviews on this week's show available online at stateofbelief.com. I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief Radio. This free State of Belief radio podcast is brought to you by Interfaith Alliance, representing 185,000 members across the U.S., drawn from 75 different faith traditions. We're committed to protecting faith and freedom. Find out about the work we do to protect the boundaries between religion and government and unite diverse voices to challenge extremism and build common ground by visiting our website, interfaithalliance.org. Whether you care deeply about minority religious rights, school bullying, LGBT discrimination, the influence of religion on politics, or the influence of politics on religion, Interfaith Alliance is working on initiatives you'll want to support. Learn more and become a member at interfaithalliance.org. Welcome back, everyone, to State of Belief Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy. My guest is Lee Groberg, producer and director of the film First Freedom, The Fight for Religious Liberty. It premieres on many PBS television stations on December 18th. Lee, what attracted you to doing this subject?
Why did I want to do it? One time I stood in Independence Hall on another film and just stood there, and there was a palpable energy. Mm-hmm. I call it a spirit of place. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, I want to understand more of what these founding fathers did, what they felt, what they understood, what their motivation was. And it just kind of grew within me. It's an evergreen type topic that needs to be seen and seen again.
Yeah, listeners to this show know that its host, myself, thinks that religious freedom, that the first freedom, is the cornerstone in our guarantee of rights and freedoms. And if we don't get this one right and keep it right, I think a lot of things can topple.
Yep.
What was the most surprising thing or the most important thing you learned while making the film?
Well, a couple of things. You know, John Adams in his papers said that the Constitution was a great document, but he feared that we were not a virtuous enough society to sustain it, since it was a government by the people. Mm-hmm. And that was his fear. I think a surprise that came to me was Benjamin Franklin, who was the second father of our country, the great statesman, who at age 81, they're wrangling, if you will, at Independence Hall over the wording of the Constitution, 4 months of it. And one day he stood up and read a prepared statement to president of the convention, George Washington. That famous homily that we always hear of, if a sparrow can fall without God's notice, how can a nation rise without his intervention? Mm-hmm. And I'd always heard that in church and thought, man, this is great. These founding fathers were all God-fearing men. But I learned in the research on this that it was turned down, flatly denied. But I felt it was important that we illustrate this.
Yeah.
And we did so. But they worked through their differing opinions, and then when he stood up again, or at least had his friend Mr. Wilson stand up and read his next speech, that was this, that I doubt that we could meet any longer and have a more perfect document than what we have drafted in the Constitution. And so, you know, those who are thumping the Bible and the table and want this to be painted as a 100% God-fearing Christian bunch of founding fathers, they're not going to see it. But I think the greater strength of this story is that they weren't all the same, and yet they were able to get along. And the diversity of faiths in this country was the secret to its success.
I'm moved by what you said, and frankly, I'm sad that the scene that you just described sounds so far away and so nearly impossible in our current situation.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're right.
Well, you clearly have a love of history. How did you get it?
I don't know. It's just in my blood. I did not train to be a filmmaker. I have a master's degree in international business management. Huh. But through a course of events, I started producing films for corporations. And then I did my first documentary in 1987, and I got hooked. And there is something that I can't hardly describe, other than when you discover something that is so interesting to yourself, you just kind of want to share it with others. And and so we've got a pretty good film crew that we are able to set the stage and turn the visual clock of history back to the time of the event. Mm. And it's my goal that the viewers can feel like a fly on the wall watching history unfold. And so when we're in places like Monticello or Colonial Williamsburg or Independence Hall or Carpenter's Hall, we turn that clock back with wardrobe, with everything we possibly can do, even replacing the floor, covering the floor with wood that looked like it would have at the time. And You know, I just think we've been able to do a fairly good job of letting the viewers be that fly on the wall and experience history firsthand.
What's next for you?
I've got a couple of three films. One, I've been working on one that's down in Mexico. It's about archaeoastronomy. It's the layout of the heavenly bodies, the constellations, and the pre-Hispanic Indians' knowledge of the heavens. Where they got that, who knows, but they were able to bring heaven to earth in the layout of their sacred sites, pyramids, burial chambers, etc. And I was asked to do this by a research foundation who's into anthropology, and again, I got hooked on that one. we're telling history that's probably a couple of thousand years old, and it's really fun. That'll probably be the next one that surfaces next year.
Lee Groberg's work has won the George Washington Medal of Honor and first place wins at various international film festivals. Credits include America's Choir, The Story of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, and American Prophet, The Story of Joseph Smith. His latest film, First Freedom, The Fight for Religious Liberty, premieres on PBS television stations nationwide on Tuesday, December 18th. Lee, thank you so much for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Well, thank you. It was a privilege.
We need to take a quick break, but coming up next, the latest book from Pope Benedict, which addresses the Christmas Nativity of Jesus, has provoked some confused and even angry responses. What's really in this book? We'll talk to Religion News Service Vatican correspondent Alessandro Speciale. I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief Radio, brought to you by Interfaith Alliance. Welcome back to State of Belief Radio, everyone. I'm Welton Gaddy. On the line with me is Religion News Service Vatican correspondent Alessandro Speciale, who joins us from Rome, Italy. Alessandro, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Hello. Thank you.
You're in Rome. How far are you from the throne of St. Peter? And I'm speaking physically, not spiritually.
My office is like just a few hundred meters just across from St. Peter's Square.
Wonderful. Well, listen, you wrote about Pope Benedict XVI's newest book, The Infancy Narratives, Jesus of Nazareth. You wrote about it for Religion News Service last week, and clearly this has touched a chord with people. I suppose part of it is due to the Pope writing it. Part of it is Christmas is drawing near. How do you explain the hyperbole that is circling around this publication?
Well, I think it's the Christmas season on one side, and the other thing is that we have come to expect it, especially people in the media, in the secular media, have come to expect it, Pope Benedict to say provocative things and to be a kind of a killjoy, even if in this case he didn't actually do much of that, to be honest.
Talk about that, because not everybody listening to us is going to know about some of his other publications. And when you say that he typically has been a killjoy, what does that mean?
Well, I mean, his remarks on condoms recently and other controversial things he said on Jews, for example, in the past. Mm-hmm. And in the case of this book, the thing that really got a lot of play was basically his book is about the childhood of Jesus. Mm-hmm. So he basically goes about on all the episodes that mark our Christmas traditions and Christmas carols. And one of the things he does, for example, is that he says very simply, look, fellas, in the Gospels, there is no sign of the animals in the stables that were there to warm up Jesus, even if they are in every nativity scene and in every song we know. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, he immediately adds up to that. But of course, no nativity scene would be complete without them, because they are part of tradition, and it would be impossible to think any of this without the animals. But this thing got a lot of play, and the Pope has even been compared to the Grinch who wanted to solve Christmas.
I am not laughing at you. I'm just because I know how sensitive and controversial the cultural characteristics of the religion narrative is, and I guess I'm just surprised that it reaches all the way to Vatican City. Tell us, Alessandro, what are the key points that the Pope makes in this book regarding the Nativity story as most of us know it?
Well, one of the things he says is that it's just this small side remark. I mean, it's less than a paragraph about the animals. Another thing he points out to, and that got a lot of attention, is that the angels didn't actually sing. He says they probably just talked, but of course, in the tradition of the Church, it is as if they have been singing, and they keep singing this song for all eternity, out of joy for the birth of Christ.
Yeah.
And another thing is you repeat something that has been said for decades now by scholars, that probably the Middle Age monk who started counting the years from zero to begin with the birth of Christ probably got his math wrong. And in fact, we have that probably Christ was actually born on 3 or 6 or 7 before Christ.
Yeah.
And he says, yeah, that these calculations are probably correct. And the point he wants to make in the book is that the Christ, and he wrote 3 books about Jesus, and he wants to make this point in all 3 books, is that the Jesus that we see through the Gospels, that has been told for us through the Gospels, is not just a spiritual figure, is not just a symbol, a metaphor, something that is who look only intellectually, but was actually a living person that walked on earth. And the story that has been told to us through the Gospels is not just a spiritual story, but it's also a real story. So we can know the real Jesus, the man Jesus, so to say, through the books, if we read them through the eyes of faith. And this is what, of course, he's the Pope, it's his job, it's what he invites everyone to do.
And this is really where I think there is an important truth here, and I want to be sure that I get it. I understand there was a term which I always like to use to impress people that I knew it, but it wasn't a very good term for talking about theology, but demythologizing theology, which was a way of trying to get to the human Jesus. But in the process of that whole movement in trying to identify the real historical Jesus, they got rid of so much of the spiritual trimmings of it that there wasn't much spirituality left. And so I'm wondering how you see the Pope walking that line between establishing Jesus as a historical person, but also maintaining elements of the story that make him a very spiritual person as well.
Well, I think the Pope's point is fairly subtle. I mean, he's a German theologian, so can be expected. Taking your words, I mean, I think he doesn't want to demythologize the theology and the account that we have of Christ, but mm-hmm. he says this mythology is not mythology, it's the real Jesus, mm-hmm. only to really get him, you don't have to, you know, take away the mythology and just get to the facts. The facts are the ones you can get to through the faith, and the faith is as important as science to really understand who was the man Jesus. I think this is the point he wants to make.
And so does there... And I have to say, I have not been able to get the book in my hands yet and read it. But is there still a star? Are there wise people from the East? Are they men or are they women? What about some of those elements of the story?
Well, on the 3 wise men, he has an interesting point. He says a famous theologian said they are probably, on account of the scholarly work that we have, they are probably a theological idea rather than based on real facts.
Yeah.
And he says, this theologian has a fair point. Personally, I prefer to think that they were real people who actually came and followed this planetary conjunction that he says was probably the star. But uh-huh. the most important thing is that it's not if there was or was not a star. The thing is that in the heart of this man, there had to be a desire, a longing for something higher, for something bigger, for something more important.
Yeah.
Or star or no star in the sky, they wouldn't have set foot and started walking towards Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And he says, this is what we, all men, should do, and especially those who are not Christians. And we can see the three wise men, how all the Christians long towards Jesus. And this is what he says. I mean, he says, I prefer to believe they were real, but even if they were not, what's important is that they started walking.
Are there implications in this book for how Christmas will be celebrated in years to come?
Oh, no. In fact, just today I was in St. Peter's Square, and they're being in the nativity scene, the big nativity scene they do there every year. And it's still not finished. It hasn't been unveiled yet. But I want to bet with you that there's going to be the ass, the ox, and that the angels will sing, and everything will be as tradition says, because the Pope, he loves tradition, but he's also a scholar. So he also has to point out what is sometimes what comes from tradition and not from the Gospels. And in fact, he writes these books as a person, as a man like you and me, and I said it in the first of the three books. Criticize me if you want, because this is no doctrine, no church doctrine, and I'm just writing as a theologian as many others.
Okay, and I'm really glad that you went to that point, because I wanted to ask about the significance of him being the Pope and writing this book. And so he makes the point that he's not trying to establish a new point of doctrine about the Nativity, but just deal with what seems to be history and what seems to be with tradition. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, what does this mean? So he's not speaking ex cathedra.
Exactly.
All right. So does that mean that when you as a journalist write about the Vatican, that you write ex cathedra? Listen, Alessandro, you're in Rome. Tell us what that city is like during Christmas time.
Well, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. They put out all the lights in the streets, and the streets are really crowded with people looking up for presents until in the very afternoon of the 24th, and all the churches are open, and there are concerts and Christmas carols and Christmas concerts in all the churches. So it's a beautiful time to come to Rome, really.
I've been speaking with Alessandro Speciale, Vatican correspondent for Religion News Service. He's writing now on Pope Benedict XVI's latest book, The Infancy Narrative, Jesus of Nazareth. His work has appeared in numerous publications worldwide. And Alessandro, I think you've given us a vivid image of where you are and what's going on there, and you've made some of us wish we could walk those streets with you. But thank you so much for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
And thanks to you.
Now, before we go, I'd like to remind you once again to contribute questions for our special questions and answers program coming up at the end of the year. Look, what questions do you have at the intersection of religion, government, and politics? What questions were you asked at Thanksgiving dinner by a family member who just doesn't get this whole interfaith thing? What was the biggest argument at your Thanksgiving table this year? What have you heard on State of Belief Radio during this past year that you want to talk about? It's time to do it. I'm more than ready to hear your questions. I think it'll be fun. Take a few minutes to contact me. Our toll-free listener line is 800-856-0277. We'd love to hear from you also on Facebook and Twitter. All the contact information is available at stateofbelief.com. Be sure to let us know what we should be talking about before 2012 is over. Thank you, and I'm looking forward to your responses. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Please visit us online at stateofbelief.com to find out more about the show, hear extended interviews, read transcripts, sign up for our podcasts. You can learn about the new State of Belief app for iPhone and Android devices, and that way you can listen to us anywhere and anytime. We encourage you to tell others about the show. State of Belief is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy, that state of belief. The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see what?